Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about grokking games. Grok is defined as understand something intuitively or by empathy. Today we'll look at how this applies to learning and playing games and how someone's ability to grok a game can affect their enjoyment of that game. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Deere, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patrons, Christopher Vincent and Nate. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. And now we're going to news and announcements, my most favorite segment.
Because
it's,
oh, yeah.
It's where I start talking and then I just never really stop.
Oh, everyone loves that.
I've heard. We have so many emails that say, we just love when Chris talks.
I agree. And I'm going to try and derail that just out of spite and, you know, hilarity.
Welcome back.
Yay. Back from a hiatus. Yeah. Two episodes. And now we're at a round number of 80. And I know you love round numbers.
I do love episodes, round numbers.
So you must be extremely excited today.
I am, at this point, I am planning what we're doing for episode 100.
I was just going to say that. We're like rolling up on 100. It's getting really close.
Because it happens really quick. Like if you're going to do something special, if I'm going to do like a segment show from previous shows or something, which I'm not going to do because that's so much work for me, I would need that 4.5 months.
Also, no one likes them.
No.
No.
There's some.
Like if you're a loyal listener, you're like, I've heard all this before.
Yeah. Over and over and over. Right. I was thinking episode 100 could just be Josh's intros for every single episode. And then at the end, we're like, and thank you to our patrons.
That's terrible. I mean, I'm planning something special for our 2-year anniversary, personally, which happens to be episode 104. But, you know, you do what you want.
Yeah, yeah. All right, you plan 104.
Yes.
I'll plan 100.
Sounds good.
In fact, we're making that commitment right now. 104 is all you. So you have to come up with the topics, everything.
I was just going to like blow a kazoo and like sing happy birthday or something. It wasn't going to be a whole episode, but sure.
People are going to judge us.
I'll go big on this.
Okay. Our BGG mini badge on BoardGameGeek is up. So if you're interested in that, go check that out. I also have the winners for our giveaway for Charterstone. Remember, we're giving away 2 separate copies to 2 people. There's no way to say that correctly.
I mean, you said it correctly. It's no way to say it
separate copies.
Concisely,
all right.
Easily.
All right, yes. One person's going to get one copy. One person's going to get another copy. I like that. And our winners are, and pay attention because you have to email me your addresses because I don't have addresses for either of them.
Little tease here. One of them has my first name. Ooh.
Ooh.
Multiple Joshes are going crazy right now.
Dun, 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 dun. So Melissa Stupka. I believe that's right.
Sure.
And Joshua Zimberg.
Wow.
So you two have won Charterstone. Woohoo!
Oh, yay! Yeah. Congratulations.
Everyone in cars everywhere are applauding for you. And if they enter, they're like, but don't worry.
But begrudgingly applauding.
Begrudgingly applauding. But don't worry. We're doing another giveaway next week. I know what we're giving away, but it's tied to next week's episode. So that's when I'm going to announce it. And there'll be more on that in a little bit because we have some feedback that's going to tie into our bonus entries for Ooh. March. A reminder, last week, Josh, you weren't here.
No. Nope.
But I'll just throw that in there a couple more times. No problem.
I feel so guilty.
But we discovered the Golden Geek Awards and Ooh. How to get to them. So apparently I have ads turned off on my BoardGameGeek account. So if ads are turned off, you don't see this banner that says, hey, click here for the Golden Geek Awards. If you just go to BoardGameGeek, look in the upper right corner. There's this big red, yellow banner that says BoardGameGeek Awards. So you can go there. Or you can go to BoardGameGeek.com/GeekAwards/BoardGame. Or you can go to TabletopGameTalk.com/Geek. All of those places will take you to the same thing. And why do we care? Josh doesn't know.
I mean, I'm just wondering who's hosting this year. I'm hoping it's Ricky Gervais because he's great at roasting people. We saw him at the Golden Globes. He's brilliant.
I thought Seth MacFarlane was surprisingly good.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see his, but I will check out some highlights.
Yeah, definitely.
We could do a roast show of each other. Maybe that's episode 100 where we just roast each other.
I like
that. We did that back in the beginning of January. So, but why would you vote for us? The Golden Geek Awards are BoardGameGeek.com's annual awards, and they basically have categories for everything. One of them is Board Game Podcast. That's the one that we would like to be in. So if you like us and you're on Board Game Geek and you want to give us a vote, we would certainly appreciate it. You get nothing in return except for good karma and our undying devotion forever. So that's all I'm saying.
If you find us at a con, we'll give you a pin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if you don't vote for us, if you find us at a con, we'll still give you a pin.
Yeah. I wasn't going to point that out. We give everyone we see a pin.
We'll give them like extra high fives or something if they voted for us.
Yes. Yeah. You get a double fist bump.
Yeah.
For sure. Hey, anything we can do. This is bribery. This is how we do that. And we promise not to email you and ask, like all the different games that I'm getting right now that are really? Emailing me and saying, hey, we're trying to get on this thing. So any thing I've ever kickstarted is basically on that list. So they're like, vote us higher in the list.
Oh, your inbox must be
exploded. I have so many filters on my inbox that I don't see those things.
I vote for a lot of them. There's many games I get that I'm like, these are worth it. I really like them. Others I'm like, they're not bad, but probably not award worthy.
So speaking of.
Oh, yes. Kickstarters. So I backed Dice Throne Season 2 because I couldn't wait. I know. I couldn't wait. I am not going to talk about this one because I had a full 45-minute conversation with Nate and Manny, who are the designers of the game. That was our side chat on Friday. So if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. It was a really good interview. They're really fun people. They basically had, you know, they worked together and decided that they liked making games. And so they just made this game. And it is a really, really fun game. Again, I've talked about it too much, so I'm not going to talk about it again. Except to say the price is $19 if you just want a two-character pack head-to-head. It's $59 if you want this particular season. And if you want everything, this season, last season, playmats, card sleeves, everything, that's $170. No bets on which one I backed. But you have until March 9th to get this. So I've added two games to my watch list. Before I start this, I am going to kind of shout out to Sam. Yes, I've looked at Alphas. Alphas is a miniature tactical superhero fighting game that's on Kickstarter. I haven't looked close enough to have an actual opinion on it, short of it's another tactical miniatures game and I don't need any more of them. But if you like little chippitzy arts and superhero and stuff, maybe check out Alpha on your own. So I'm just going to call that one out because it does look cute. It's just not one that I'm going to back because I have too many of those already.
Right.
So the first one that I possibly will back is City of Gears. It is, City of Gears, a game of discovery, development, and disruption. So they describe this as a unique steampunk-themed area control game of discovery, development, and disruption for up to four players. This one looks pretty cool. The base game is $49, and the upgraded game is $59. So for $10 more, you get a bunch of special components and Kickstarter cool stuff and all that. Just go with the $59 if you're going to go with it. There's like
such a small difference.
Yeah,
$10, so much more stuff, much cooler.
There's like 40 backers at the $49 level and like 1,000 backers at the $59 level. So it's like it ends March 15th. So City of Gears is a worker placement, area majority, area discovery, victory point. Basically, they call their victory points prestige game. I told you.
That's a lot of things.
Yeah. We're doing the buzzword. I did the vocabulary episode. Right. I can now use the vocabulary.
Go for it, man.
But I'm going to explain it. It's a pretty cool steampunk theme. You place 9 random tiles out on a 3x3 grid. Initially, they're all face down. And as you move your little robot dudes around, you will discover those tiles and they flip up. The idea is you're exploring a lost city of steampunk technology and you want to control as much of it as you can. You also draw gears from a bag. So it's kind of like this blind bag thing. You draw this gear and it has a special ability. And you can play the special ability on your card that allows you to, you know, power up your little robot fraction. Or you can put these gears down to connect the different rooms together. And the more connections you have on these rooms, the more likely you are to take control of it. So it's this area majority, not area control, because multiple people can be there. It's the number of gears connected plus the number of robots on there to determine who has it. So you keep doing this until a certain event happens. I believe all the tiles are revealed. Then you put 5 special gears in the bag. And when you draw 3 of those special gears out, the game ends. Who has the most prestige wins. It's by Gray Fox Games, and they do some really good stuff. The Viking game that, why am I losing?
Blood Rage?
No. Where you roll the dice.
I know what game you're talking about.
That you roll the dice in?
Yes.
It's my guess. Okay.
And it was written, I should have written down because I knew exactly what it was. But anyway, they do another game and Champions of Midgard. Champions? Maybe it is Champions.
Yeah, I think it's Champions.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, they just did a Kickstarter that added expansions to it.
I can see the board in my mind.
I know. It is great. They do great components. I really like this company. So I'm going to give them a chance. And this is highly, highly likely on my list. If you want it, it's March 15th is when it goes. The other one, there's only one. The other one is Aeon's End. Aeon's End Legacy. Now, Aeon's End is a deck building game, and there's a bunch of them out right now. I have not played it, but this one is Aeon's End Legacy. So why am I backing this Legacy game, you may ask? Basically because it's Legacy, and I haven't played Aeon's End, and I've heard really good things about it. So this one's a cooperative deck building Legacy post-apocalyptic fantasy game. The base game runs about $65. But you can go as high as $170 if you want this game and everything else that they've released. So if you want all of the retail publications of the base game and all the expansions. There's also a number of add-ons. So you have the accessory pack, which adds some, you know, extra dice and some card separators, some plastic counters. You have the reset pack so that you can replay the legacy thing. You can get the playmat. You can get all that stuff. So that one also ends March 15th. I think I'm going to get this because it's Legacy and it's deck building, and I really like Legacy and deck building, even though I have a lot of Legacy games and a lot of deck building games. I don't have a lot of Legacy deck building games. I only have like one or two.
The thing that's intriguing me is Anne's End. Like, I've not heard of this. What's the theme? Like, it's intriguing. Anne's End? Is she going to end people?
Could be. Yes. It's post-apocalyptic. So, it's basically, end's already there. Now you're just starting over again.
Who is this Anne figure that ended the world?
Not Anne. A-E-O-N.
Oh. We say Aeon. Anyway, carry on.
I
think you just kind of slur it a little. We got that Midwestern thing.
It's like when you say mirror, you guys say mirror.
Yeah, say water.
No, not your performing monkey, except I kind of am, because I read all these words for you.
I appreciate it.
No, I'm kidding. I'm a willing participant.
All right. One other one I'm going to mention, and I'll get into more detail next week, but it has just come out, and AEG is sending all kinds. I got a postcard in the mail on this one. Email on this. Like, I've seen it everywhere. It's on the top of the hotness on Board Game Geek, and that's Edge of Darkness. I will say I just recently got the Thunderstone Quest Kickstarter in, which is also from AEG. Based on what I got from that Kickstarter, I am going to back Edge of Darkness. Just normal Edge of Darkness.
I seriously think there's a great idea in here. I love this idea that there's some soccer mom called Anne and she just like ends the world somehow.
Is it my sister?
Could be.
Sounds great.
She is terrifying.
Yeah, we can just take pictures of her in like Photoshop filters. Anyway, as I was saying, Thunderstone Quest's it's this box that's just huge. I put in a picture on Twitter. It's as tall as the Gloomhaven box. It's almost the same size of the Gloomhaven box.
That's a huge box.
It weighs, like, without the packaging in there, it weighs probably 15, 16 pounds. It is just solid cards and card sleeves and boards, and there's so much in there. And Thunderstone Quest is a great game, and AEG did a great job with the Kickstarter. Based on that, Edge of Darkness is... I'm just going to back it. In a nutshell, Edge of Darkness is sort of like card construction, as in like Mystic Veil, where you have a card sleeve and you have transparent cards. So you're buying these pieces of the cards and you're putting them in the card sleeve, so your cards modify over time. And then they combine that with like a worker placement mechanic and give it a cool name like Edge of Darkness. And voila, you have Chris's money. That's all it takes, really.
Sweet.
All right. Our Kickstarter review. And Josh can help me on this one.
I can.
I had a birthday on Friday, and Josh came up to the Great North, we call it.
yes, that's what they call the northern suburbs of Chicago. Yeah.
We missed it, but the baby is not a good traveler / birthday party guest yet.
/ He'll board game player.
No, but he is wearing his board game shirt today.
Aw. Yeah, we got a little call out saying, hey, here's this onesie. And I'm like, oh. Bought.
what did it say on it again?
Keep calm and game on.
Love it.
Yep. All right. So Rising Sun. So this is Eric Lang's newest game. It plays 3 to 5 players out of the box, up to 6 with an expansion. And to use terms It's victory point, area control, area majority, with action selection and action following. How's that?
Well, I like the fact that it's samurais killing each other.
All right, that's a good term too. Basically, after you work through the setup, which gets much easier after the first game, the game plays by each player selecting an action, such as martial, which allows you to move your troops around, recruit, which lets you add figures to the board wherever you happen to have stronghold, harvest, which allows you to, basically everyone gets a gold, but if you chose it, you also get to get, you know, special resources from each of the territories that you have majority in, such as the majority control. You can train, which is buying cards to enhance your side, your monsters, your victory points. Or you can betray, which if you're in an alliance, we'll get to that in a second, it breaks your alliance. But if you're not in an alliance, it's a way of like balancing that so that, well, I can betray and I have actually no consequences to it. I can just do that. And really what betray is I take two figures off the board and I replace them with my figures.
But I like how you put it to us when we were playing, like, you know, there are elements of the game diplomacy in there where there's a lot of, you know, talking about, oh, I'll do alliances with you. Or you can even just like bribe people or come up with creative ways to kind of get people to do what you want.
Yep. So it's like, all right, we're in an alliance and it's benefiting you more than it's benefiting me. So, you know, give me a couple gold so that I don't betray you and stab you in the back. Yeah, the rules do encourage like this non-mechanical negotiation, but we rarely played with it at all. So the game plays just fine. If you don't like that kind of negotiation stuff.
Which I don't.
Right.
As we know.
Yes. The game plays just fine without it.
We did a little bit. There was definitely some, I'll give you two gold if you do this action with
but
your
turn.
But
we never actually followed through with any of it.
Yeah, I guess we didn't. Yeah, I mean, you're right. We were very light on it, but it happened. Yeah.
But just the fact that it could be there was interesting. And I think once you play the game a few times, I think that negotiation, social negotiation stuff can come out a lot more, or if you have the right group of people. But again, if you don't like that, it plays fine as a normal board game. So it also plays, I want to say, relatively quick. We played a 5-player game and that took about 3 hours, but only two of us had played before.
Yeah.
And then the 3-player game we played at Capricorn, that maybe took 2 hours.
Sounds about right.
So it wasn't too bad. What you do is you play through three seasons, spring, summer, autumn.
The
good seasons. Each one of those has seven what they call political mandates. These are these actions that you're going to select. So one of us will select it, and then the person who selected it's left will take the first action. So if I choose Marshall, we can move figures around. But I chose it, so I go last, which is good because I want to see where everyone else goes before I move my figures. Now, because I chose it, I can also build a stronghold if I spend 3 money. Great. So I chose Marshall. Everyone got to move. I got to move last, and I got a bonus on top of that. If you're my ally, then you also can spend 3 money to build a stronghold. And that's why you sort of want to ally with people, because you get that bonus action whenever your ally chooses it. So that's kind of a cool mechanic. And only 7 of these are chosen. And the way that you choose it is you have a stack of 8 tiles, and you're going to 10 tiles, and you're going to choose the top 4. You're going to pick one of those, and you put the other 3 on top, and you're going to pass the stack. So you know what the next person, you know, 3 of their options, and they're going to add one more to that. So you can kind of, you know, sell that knowledge if you want to, or just have that knowledge. So you're like, all right, well, this person's likely going to pick this or that because I know that that's going to benefit them and I know it's available to them.
Plus, each clan has a kind of asymmetrical power to them. So you can kind of say, okay, I know he's going to use this tile because he's got this power. So I'm going to block him and use it myself, which is kind of cool. You know, there's lots of strategy involved there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 8 factions. You can only get in the box itself, when you first get the game, there's actually 5 factions available. So for the $100 for the retail copy, or I think it's around that much, you can get it online for like $80, I'm certain. But you get 5 factions. There's an expansion called Dynasty Invasion where you get 2 more factions. So that's 7 factions. And here's the part where a lot of people really are upset with Cool Mini or Not and just their whole Kickstarter strategy. The 8th faction is a Kickstarter exclusive. So if you didn't get it through the Kickstarter, you will never play that 8th faction. Now, I will say that the 8th faction is not fantastic. It's probably one of the weaker of the factions, but it's the one that's like right in the middle of the board, so it's still a little annoying. I backed it, so I have it. I'm just warning everyone.
I mean, the thing I love about this game is just the art is so gorgeous. Like, I mean, Cool Mini is, you know, known for their amazing art, but like, I love that Asian flavor, and it's got real modern twists, and there's like mythology in there. There's like a big Leviathan type dragon serpent thing as one of the huge monsters, and this, oh, it's so cool looking. And then obviously Eric Lang is like the rock star game designer that everyone's like, he's amazing, which he is, you know, like his games, I've played them, most of them, and they're amazing. So yep. I think he's done another hit. I liked it a lot.
I agree. And honestly, if I'd only had the five factions in the base game, I'd be completely happy with it. Right. You know, I didn't kickstart Blood Rage, and I love Blood Rage, and there's a ton of content that I will never play with, but I don't care. I've never seen it. Blood Rage plays just fine out of the box.
Right.
So this game, like you said, the asymmetricalness, so there's up to eight different factions, all asymmetrical. You can only play up to six. Even if you had everything, you can still only play up to six. There's monsters, there's the upgrade cards, there's all of that. I wanted, when I first saw it, because a lot of people were comparing it to Blood Rage. Is it better than Blood Rage? Is it better than Blood Rage? And I really wanted to, in my head, say, it's not Blood Rage. It is a better version of Blood Rage. So if you want the added level of complexity. So Blood Rage has all of the elements of, you know, upgrading cards, drafting, putting out monsters, area control, battles, all of those things are there. And I think it's a very streamlined and simple game. Simple enough where anytime I've taught this, people immediately grok it, to bring it back to our topic of this episode. With Rising Sun, that's not necessarily the case. There's a number of extra levels that are added on top of it. So if you really like Blood Rage and you want to see the next thing, Rising Sun is a great, great game. I could play Rising Sun and never play Blood Rage again, and I wouldn't feel bad about it. But if I played Blood Rage, I'd be happy with it as well. You don't necessarily need both if you're happy with the Rising Sun complexity level, which, again, not that much more complex, but there's a few more layers there. But I really liked it. And Josh, you lost.
I lost
miserably.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
You, Gloria beat you.
And Sydney, we were counting up the totals at the end, and they were asking my point score for some particular element. And I was like, yeah, there's zero for that. And she was like, aw. And I'm like, how patronizing. How dare you? This is my first time playing. But yeah, I still really liked it. I mean, there was a little bit of sting in there. Like, I definitely would have enjoyed this more had I done better. But I really enjoyed it. And I know I'd love it if I played it again.
Yeah, I just assume you let me win.
That's what happened.
It was my birthday game. So
yeah. Of course.
Sounds like when we played Near and Far last week.
Exactly.
And I just lost miserably.
Oh, no.
It was really fun, though. More campaign style. So I did get the most experience.
Oh, that's cool.
I just focused on the wrong things for points.
Yeah, I was doing much the same in my game.
Yeah. And we accidentally played Near and Far, so we're playing the campaign, but you're not supposed to play map one on the campaign.
Yeah, so we messed that up.
Yeah. So, but the only thing we're carrying forward, because we can't carry the points forward since that doesn't apply to the campaign, but we're like, well, we might as well carry the experience forward. So really, it sets Kitty up for the best.
Yeah, I won. Really?
Yeah, really, you won. Yeah, I love it.
All right, let's get to some feedback, shall we?
Indeed. Yeah. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So the first one is from Sam. He says, I like the idea of 10x10 challenge that Chris mentioned in last episode. Not being a challenge, but more as a resolution to get certain games to the table more often. Based on the comments in the thread on BGG and the discussion from the podcast, I'm very interested in getting an idea of what games the TGT community is planning to get onto their collector tables this year. So if you're interested in learning this too, Sam will be doing an analytic number crunchy type thing where he gets the data to do a deep dive into, you know, what people are playing and how often they're going to play it. So he's set out his parameters, which he says anyone who wants to share, and that includes the host, would need to post their lists of games in the episode 79 forum. Chris, if you have the time and you're willing to cut and paste people's emails into the forum, it would allow non-BGG fans a way to participate.
I have even a better idea, so we'll get to that in a second.
Oh. And he says, number two, I will stop collecting data March 31st, giving a polling length of roughly 6 weeks. Number three, expansions for games or games that can be fully integrated with earlier versions will count towards players of the base game, such as additional Arkham Horror scenarios counting towards Arkham Horror LCG, Zaya Embers counting towards Zaya, Ice Cool 2 counting towards Ice Cool. Number four, I will attempt to give intermittent reports around Feb 28th and March 15th in case you're interested.
All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to one-up this a bit. If you leave a list on BoardGameGeek on the thread, and it does not have to be a full 10 games and just a couple games, like games that you're like, I want to play these 10 times
this year. My resolution is to bring them to the table more this year.
Exactly. If you leave that list there and email me to enter the March giveaway, just mention that you left the list there and put your BGG name in there, you will get 5 entries for that email instead of 1. Now, this is a self-serving thing. Especially whenever I give 5 entries, it means there's something good here. I want to increase the activity on the BGG threads. So this is essentially my bribery to get you to go and enter your information. Like if you don't have a BGG account, super easy, super free. No difficulty doing that. So what I want you to do, though, is I want you to go there. I want you to participate in the conversations. I want to have as much interactions as we can. So 5 entries if you mention your BGG name when you enter next month. Also, I'm going to randomly pick someone from that thread to win a $25 Amazon gift card. So if you are in that thread, you will be entered in that gift card because I want to make it international friendly. So anybody, I'm pretty sure anybody in the world can spend Amazon money.
Oh, yeah.
So that is my promise to do this. And Sam, because of your March 31st deadline, that will be the deadline for the newest contest of next month. And that way we will just correlate everything and Sam's going to give us all of the cool data. Ooh. But I'm actually interested because we may do an episode on like the top 10 tabletop game talk listener games that they want to play, because I think that would be really cool to do.
Okay, so we have a quick comment from Corey on BGG. I enjoyed the discussion on the 10x10 game challenge in episode 79, and it got me thinking more about it. I'm still not going to do one, probably, maybe, but I loved many points that were made during the episode, keeping things balanced. A 10x10 is likely a team effort, unless all of your games are solo games. So maybe don't have a list of 10 heavy long games, or on the other end, a list of 10 games that need high player counts. I loved the idea of leaving some open spots or giving yourself permission to change your list by adding or firing games from it. I love that it's firing games. Life's too short to play bad games.
Yep. We had a lot of feedback on the 10x10. Like people just liked the idea and hadn't really thought about it before, really. Like I really hadn't thought about it before either, so... that was a good topic suggestion. Sydney actually had a input on it too, and I made her email me because I'm like, all right, so we were talking about it, and she's like, I think you should do this. I'm like, all right, well, email me and I can put it in the episode. I'm like, I don't want to email.
Just so formal.
I know. Well, otherwise I'll forget when I'm doing the show notes.
I'm with you.
So she emails me and it just says rolling 10x10. That's all it says.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, what does this even mean?
So what it means is essentially what you do is once you've completed 10 of one of your games, you take that off. And you add in another game that you're going to start again.
I like it.
And that one, the date resets on it. So each game now has 1 year. From the time you put it on the list, you have 1 year to do the 10 plays. So then you have this kind of continuous rolling system.
It feels less like a New Year's resolution and more just like a system you use to play your games.
Exactly.
All the time.
Yeah. A reminder to say, hey, this game is good enough where I really want to play it more times. And this is my way of reminding myself to get it to the table.
Yeah, I like that. And I think if it was me, I'd add the caveat of having almost like a sort of winner's board of ones that I had completed, you know, 10 or however many I decided to do for each game, so that I didn't feel like I was constantly like, oh, I'm never achieving anything. I'd have like this big like board of like, oh, look, all these games I did 10 times.
Yep. And another thing you could do is like when you pull that one off, that gives you permission to shop for a new game. So if you have, you know, you maybe limited income or significant others, is like play your games before you buy new ones. It's like, all right, I just finished this. Now I can go buy another one to put on that list.
Nice.
So also quick comments from Sam and Terrence. Both made comments about using air fresheners to cover up the not so fresh game store smell. They made a good point that this could even, the cure could be worse than the disease.
Yes.
So maybe it's best to just have instructions about how to shower. And I think that should just be lather, rinse, repeat as necessary. done. I love reading the instructions on shampoo bottles. All right, one really quick question.
Real quick question. So this is a question we think is interesting but won't fill an entire show topic. So today's question comes from Jason. He just found out that one of his favorite game demoers is going to be at BGG Spring, Rodney Smith. I'm hoping to get a game with him and with all my gaming brethren. Watching Watch It Played ramped up my interest in the hobby. So is there an etiquette for how to approach or meet these personalities of the hobby? I hope one day to meet you guys at a convention. You guys need to venture south. It's warmer and we got barbecue here.
So I am always willing to go to Oklahoma and Texas. There was a game convention I went to in Austin called ChupaCabraCon that someday I will get back there. So I will let you guys know if I'm ever going to be there. How to meet... And I don't even want to say celebrities, because even Rodney Smith, I love Watch It Played, but he's just a normal person. We're just normal people.
Personalities, let's say.
Personalities, sure. So the best way to meet them, or anyone really, is just go up and say, hey, I'm so-and-so, I listen to this, or I watch this, and I really enjoy your show. I promise you, from experience, it's more fun for us. And we're going to be like, oh my God.
Or at least as fun.
Yeah, it's as fun.
Yeah. Not saying it's not fun for you.
Yeah.
It's both.
No personality is going to say, yeah, and I don't care. Go away.
Like, right? That's not why they're doing this.
No. It's like, I get the whole idea. It's like, I've listened to you. This is one of the things that I think we all have to get used to. Because after doing this quite a while, like, people recognize our voices, like you're in the hall or something and people recognize it, and they will know so much about you, us, like people know about Josh, where Josh doesn't know this person at all. So it's more of an adjustment to us. Like, we're trying to kind of catch up to where you are in this relationship. You know us really well. We don't know you at all. So ask a question and, like, you know, have a conversation to go, or just say, hey, I'm looking forward to this game I have with you in, you know, tomorrow at 3 o'clock or something like that. The first time I met Tom Vassell, he was at Grand Con in Grand Rapids, Michigan, my, I guess, hometown's where I went to high school. And I met him like the day before. It's like, oh yeah, we just came up here to play the charity game of Sheriff of Nottingham with you. It's like, oh great. Is that this one or this one? It's that one. It's like, yeah, we'll see you there tomorrow. Okay. And then we played the game, and then it was him and Z Garcia, and they didn't have anything to do. They were, you know, we're kind of mulling around. It's like, yeah, we're thinking about getting lunch. I'm like, oh yeah, if you want, there's this good place across the street. You know, if you want to come to lunch, we'll buy. He's like, okay, sure. So we went and had lunch with them. So it's just kind of a, like you would with any other person you played a game with.
To be friends with someone, offering to buy them food is always a great way in.
Yeah, I would agree. Or just come with a sandwich. It's like, hey, I have this sandwich. Don't do that.
Don't offer people unwrapped homemade food.
Yeah, unsolicited food's a bad idea. Yeah. But offered food.
Nice.
So, yeah, just don't worry about it.
Be yourself.
We're all just normal people.
Try to be calm. Oh. I'm really bad at that. So, yeah.
Well, you meet a lot of authors.
I do. I had a really hard time meeting both Tamora Pierce and Meg Cabot, or like people I met where I was just like, hi. And they looked at me like, I get this a lot.
Yeah, and remember,
they're used to it.
Yeah. Well, also remember, you have a lot in common with these people.
Yes.
So we're talking about this, sure, but you're listening. So you are just as interested in the same topics. And that naturally creates an easy conversation.
Yeah, it's a nice icebreaker. Like, oh, you know, how was that game that you talked about the other week, you know, on the podcast? Yeah.
Or have you checked this out or that out? And we can talk about these forever, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So this may be the longest off-topic record by like 3 minutes. So we're going to go.
All right, it's the Olympics, you know. We've got to set records.
Yeah, okay. Oh, let me set a record by pressing this.
In this episode, we're talking grokking games. Grok isn't the most common term used in board gaming, but it's certainly applicable to our hobby. But what about those people that don't have an intuitive understanding of new games? What can we do to help someone's grokking ability? And if you say grok too many times, does it start to sound like a made-up word? Maybe it just sounds like a made-up word.
I was going to say it started sounding like a made-up word.
It's not. I Googled it.
I mean, it sounds like some sort of like cool ska band or grungy type of genre of music. Like,
kind of dancing that looks really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Sydney thought it was a derogatory term used for gamers. Oh, that grokking gamer.
Yeah, Josh is such a grokking gamer, man.
Yeah. So none of that's true. It is actually a real term. I hear it a lot. Tom Vassell will use it a lot. It's like, yeah, you know, I typically grok games quickly or something like that. So that's how you'll hear it.
And you tend to do this as well. I mean, the amount of times you pick up a game and be like, yeah, it looks like this game plus this game with a twist of that game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, if you say so.
Yeah, well, and part of like intuing the strategy of how you might win, like what might be a good, you know, cards right. to collect or actions to take or something like that. Some people can just sit down and say, oh, I think you need to do this, this, and this. Other people are completely lost. They have no idea what the point of this game is. What is? Why would I do any of this? What is the end result?
Hello. But, you know, part of it is just because I kind of get lost in the details of learning about the game. You know, often I'm coming to it completely cold and you're teaching me a game you understood because you read the rule book and you've grokked it a bit or you've seen a video, and I'm just trying to get my head around the individual rules. So I'm not able to kind of sit on that 30,000 foot ledge and be like, oh yeah, there's this element, there's that element. I'm just like, okay, wait, he said I can do this and that, and wait, what was that rule again?
Yeah, well, and you don't come off as someone who's not grokking things well.
Right.
I can't wait to just keep using this word over and over and over. I promise we're going to set a record for using it in this episode, and we probably won't use it a lot in future episodes. But so one of the reasons why I wanted to do this topic, and it wasn't a suggested topic, but it came up in the Board Game Geek thread of the vocabulary episode, where someone mentioned that, you know, the term grok is like sometimes used and not sure what it is. So consider this defined. But the last couple weeks, I've been playing a number of board games with new players of at least to that genre of board game. And three of them specifically I'm going to bring up. Empires of the Void 2, which was one we played at Capricorn. And we had one player who so didn't get the game, like how to win or what the strategy or what he should do next, that at one point he threw his glasses down on the table, scattering pieces from the board, like anger level of just not comprehending what was going on in the game,
right.
Or at least nothing's really going his way type of thing. And like, I tried this, I don't get nothing. I tried that, nothing happens. Like, this game makes no sense. Like, that type of thing.
Yeah, I felt a little bit like that in Rising Sun. You know, like you did mention I did get crushed.
Sure. And we're going to, Rising Sun's third one.
Right.
The second one, and we're going to put this as a combination of two. So the Dwarf King, which is a trick-taking game, but it's a trick-taking game where the rules change every round. And we were playing this with someone who's good at trick-taking games, played hearts, played, you know, those type of things, comparing it to this, that, or whatever. But with this game, because the rules changed every time, it wasn't always clear. Sometimes you didn't want to take tricks. Sometimes you did. And it took several hands for that to kind of click with, oh, the strategy of what I'm doing is changing every round.
But see, isn't that like the opposite of a grok? Because in a grok, you're kind of using your past experience to then inform what you should do next. But I guess for that particular scenario, he was using his past experience with those types of games, but this one had twisted it such that, you know, it wasn't working for him.
Potentially. You could see it that way.
Right.
The way I think of it is more of, He couldn't grok this game because he was being blocked. He was being grok blocked by other games that is played the same way.
Right.
But in all of those other games didn't like allow him to understand this game in the same way because it was so different from what he knew.
Right, right.
That
right.
It wasn't intuitive to him, which is kind of the reason behind the whole grokking thing, right?
Right,
so it's not intuitive. Therefore, it becomes more confusing.
Right.
And then the third one that I want to talk about is the Rising Sun game. And this was one that we played and Gloria played with us.
Yep.
So the other two I'm not going to mention by name, but Gloria, she gets mentioned by name.
Yep.
But she just did not get that game, right?
Right.
And I think that really interfered with her having fun. And one of the things that was interesting about that is she just really didn't understand why she would want to do anything or what she was trying to accomplish in the early game to get to winning of the end game. Where you, on the other hand, you had an idea of what you were going to accomplish or what you were trying to accomplish, but maybe just not the best way of accomplishing
that. Sure, that's right.
So I think that's a fundamental difference in that.
Yeah,
right?
Even towards the end of the game, she was like whispering over to me, like, "Hey, what's my best move? I have no idea." and you know, she's a real like non-gamer. Like, she doesn't really play board games unless, you know, we make her. So you know, I get that. So it makes sense that she's not, you know, grokking isn't a thing that she does that much. And
shout out to Gloria for even playing, because that was a really big game to throw down and be like, no, you're going to like this. She's like, what about Scrabble? No, you're going
to
like this.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Sydney were very skeptical in the car.
But that's a tough one to throw at a not normal gaming group.
But yeah. Chris did make the point. It was like, it's my birthday. And then we were like, oh, yeah, this is the day you get to do what you want. And everyone else puts up with it.
Most people had fun.
Yeah, they did. She had fun.
I don't think she knew why she had fun.
Yeah.
But... So Caleb actually mentioned right off the bat in the BGG thread, I try to explain things rules first, theme second. So first explaining exactly what happens, then explaining why it happens. And I'm going to tie this back to Rising Sun, because in Rising Sun, Gloria had issues with, well, this isn't how the real world works. This isn't what you would be doing, or how does this work? It has a theme, but the mechanics may not fit directly in with why you might do something. Why are we going through and making all these political things and then we're going to fight at the end? Like, that doesn't make sense. That's not how the world works. So that's really what I want to kind of come back to is...
like, theme only takes you so far.
Right. Is the fact that theme is maybe not directly tied to the mechanics, is that a problem for gamers trying to get into it? Is it... if we have a stronger theme that says I can explain the rules to you in an abstract way instead of a mechanical way, would that help get those gamers a better understanding of what's going on?
Maybe. I mean, Gloria did mention during when we'd finished playing the game, she was like, you know, one of the reasons she enjoyed the Star Trek, I want to say it was a deck building game.
The Star Trek deck building game. It's literally called Star Trek deck building game.
There you go.
And easy title.
Right. And she's a big Star Trek fan. And so she was like, it was easier for her to get her head around those concepts of how you would play with the Klingon cards, for instance, because she knew that they were an aggressive race and that was more about attacking, and so she could intuit a lot through the theme and was I guess more engaged with the material as well because of it.
That's a sign of a really good theme, that you can understand, like, oh, I know Star Trek, so I know that Q is going to throw a wrench in the works or what have you. A lot of games, even if they have the theme, don't always play on those things that people know about it already. Like, and also how familiar most people are with the theme is really going to affect how much you can count on that. Like, you know, Japanese feudal society. I know so much about that I don't even need the rules to this. Yeah, not so much.
Yeah. Right. Yes. And now here's my question. Did Gloria grok the Star Trek deck building game? Or did she just enjoy it because the theme was immersive enough where it didn't matter if she was doing the right thing to win the game? Mm-hmm. She just enjoyed doing anything because these different thematic things came up and she's like, oh, I get that.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. I think it is exactly as you just described. I don't think she sort of intuitively understood how to play that deck building game because it was a Star Trek theme. There might have been a tiny little bit, like I said, with the whole like Klingon aggression thing, but she's so new to gaming that I think, you know, for her it was still very much like, oh, I don't know how this works. But you're right, she was really engaged with the material, so she was more willing to learn it and pay attention and try and work it out.
I also think there's less going on in that game.
Yes.
The deck building mechanic is really all you have to pick up. And then once you've got your deck, you have your hand. There's a limited number of decisions you can make. Whereas looking at a big board where you're trying to move troops around, that's a lot harder. And trying to decide, you know, how I'm going to deal with three or four other players, you know, throws a lot of human kind of chaos into the mix.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think even in Rising Sun, I was forgetting things. Like, there was this, you know, section at the top of the board where you could place some of your army people.
The white-based figures is what we're calling them.
Right.
And there was like temples or shrines or temples, whatever, one or the other that you could place.
Right. Them, yeah. And it was just a section I sort of forgot about for nearly the whole game. And it was just, I see, and then suddenly someone would get something for because they put people there. And I'm like, oh yeah, I could have taken advantage of that, but I didn't. Oh no. And so, yeah, I think with a game of complexity like that, there's so many moving parts and sort of plates you're spinning in your head that you've got to juggle at once, that it becomes hard to kind of grok. Like, I'd played Blood Rage before and I've done well in games of it, but that didn't help me in this scenario as much. But then I don't see myself as particularly great at grokking personally, at least yet.
And like I said, I think you underestimate yourself, but maybe that's the problem. Is I overestimate your grokking ability. Right, I think that you're understanding this game more than you are actually understanding the game.
Right, yeah,
maybe. Which may lead to you not giving the same advice that you would give to somebody who wasn't getting it.
Right.
If somebody's not getting the game at all, you're going to, you know, train wheels on, give them a hand. But like, yeah. Once you see like, oh, they're doing what they should be doing, they're like making moves that make sense to you, you're going to back off, let them do their thing. Yeah.
He's played Blood Rage before, he probably gets it, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has something to do with long-term versus short-term rewards, I suppose. So when you're looking at something like a deck building game, I'm going to buy this card. It's in my hand. All the cards in my hand are going to do something, and I can see an immediate return on what those cards do. And when I put something in my deck, I can see an immediate return of I'm eventually going to draw that card and be able to do that thing. Where in something like Rising Sun or Empires of the Void, what happens there is I'm going to do something and I'm not going to see a return on that until maybe 40 minutes from now, when we're in like a resolution phase, or even worse, 2 hours from now, when I'm gathering victory points. And without that immediate return on your investment of that thing, it's like, well, I don't know if that is a good move, because that doesn't do anything for me now. Even though it may be the best long-term move, it makes it much harder to grok something if you have to think in that long-term.
I think the complexity of the scoring system affects me a lot. If it's straightforward, you do a thing, you get points for the thing, or you know, you earn points in these specific ways, or whoever has this wins. Those things I can pick up really fast. But we were playing Near and Far last week, and I didn't notice that some of the things had the little victory points and some of them did not. So I just thought, like, oh, if I keep taking actions, keep doing these things, I will gain points. But I wasn't. Oh. I was gaining experience, but I did not pick up, like, any victory points. So while I ended up with the most experience in the game, I ended up with a really, like, almost half the score that Spencer and Chris had. But it's a little bit different, because in a campaign, is that helpful to me maybe for the long term, that I start with the more experience and then I can use that later to gain more points, perhaps?
Are you retro grokking where you're like, no, I meant to throw that first game so I could get experience.
I'm just thinking about it later. I don't know.
Yep. So, but that's a good point though, because a lot of these games, the early game goal is different than the end game goal.
Yes.
So if we look at deck building games again, like Dominion is an easy game to learn to play. It is not the switch in Dominion. So at the very beginning, you are essentially buying cards to build up your deck. And at some point, though, you're going to switch and you want victory points in your deck. But victory points in your deck are essentially dead cards when you draw them in your hand. So you don't want too many of them early, because they don't do anything.
Get anything.
Right. So part of the trick of Dominion is, when do I switch from getting cards to getting victory points?
Yeah.
And that way, you know, that is a grokking thing of it. Now, it's just one thing you have to do. And eventually, if I see Josh is starting to go for victory points, I'm like, oh, I should probably do that too now. So everyone kind of goes at the same time or relatively close. So that game is easy to grok because of that.
And I think that that particular mechanic of sort of building things up and then having to switch to kind of converting whatever it is you built up into victory points. There's so many games that do that. And it was one of the biggest things that helped me, you know, when we first started playing games, you know, a year and a half ago together. I remember we were playing some game and you then afterwards, I'd lost quite badly. You explained that exact thing. It's like knowing exactly when to tip over into converting as opposed to building up. And I was like, Oh, and now I see it all the time, and I definitely am grokking that particular mechanic. Like, photosynthesis was the same way. It was very much, you're building up these trees, but then you've got to harvest them at some point, and it was just like doing the, you know, picking the right moment to do that.
And so you that's killed us at that game. I did, yeah. Destroyed us. You had the moment.
Thank you. And it means a lot for you to bring it up again, because now I'm getting the glow all over again.
It's almost like you're synthesizing.
Yes.
I don't know. That's really not how that works. But no. Tyrants of the Underdark was the one you were talking about, where it's like it's an area control deck building game.
Yes.
And you are buying cards to get that those area controls. But at some point, you need to like start focusing on the points as well. So this is all goes back to this whole idea of how many times do you need to play a game before you understand it? And that's really the difference between grokking a game and learning a game.
Yes.
For if you, and I don't know, I think you can learn to grok games better, at least certain types. Like, oh, I get it. Oh, yeah. It's like this, this, and this. So I just get it now. Intuition is a learned thing. You know, you don't just have intuition. You learn it over time and you start relating experiences subconsciously. I think that's what intuition is experience related subconsciously to something new. And so that can happen. But if you, for you know, Tyrants of the Underdark, you didn't grok that game, you learned how to play that game. And then the next deck building game that you played, or the next one, that one you did grok. Because right. Like, oh, yeah, no, I get this. This is, I'm experienced with this kind of mechanic.
Yeah.
I think point salad games are really, really hard.
Yeah.
I think those ones, though, it really is just like, it clicks or it doesn't. Like, if you're trying to learn it, it's going to take you a long time. But there's a lot of times where I just look at a point salad game, and I'd say it's probably 50-50 at this point, where I can just look at it and go like, oh, yeah, okay. I know how I'm scoring points. I know how to get those points. I got it. But sometimes I'm looking at you, Great Western Trail. I'm just like, oh, like I got nothing here.
It's just really hard for me to focus my attention. I don't know if it's anything to do with grokking or not, but it's more like with these point salad games, I'm just pulled in so many directions and I'm thinking too short term, and I'm not like, you know, we've talked about this before. I just can't, I find it very hard to like focus on a couple of things because I want to do it all. And then, even when I do start to focus, if it doesn't start to immediately work, I then sort of do that thing like when you're sitting in a line at the checkout and you're looking at the other lines and you're like, oh no, I should have picked the other line.
The traffic lane, yeah.
I should have picked the other line. Then you switch and then somehow that takes longer because there was some old woman with just loads of coins. And so it's like that with my strategy. I was just like, oh, I thought this was working, but it's not working. It's not paying off quick enough. So I've got to switch strategy and then that doesn't work. I'm like, oh no.
Yes.
Yes.
I see. What I do normally with point salad games, because I don't really, I haven't met a game recently where I'm just like, well, that's not true. Actually, we'll talk about a game that I just didn't get until I started playing it a couple times. But typically, like for a point salad game, what I want to know is what is a good score? And if I know what a good score is, I can then look at a particular move and say, okay, this move's going to give me 2 points. This move's going to give me 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, the grand scheme of things, there's only 100 points in the game. So is that 4 points worth it? Is that really what I want to do? Or is there a better way to handle that? But if there's only like 20 points in the game and this one gives me 2 and this one gives me 6, those 4 points are huge. And I know that the 6 point move is a good move because that's going to really jump me up. So that's how I kind of approach that.
That's true. I definitely did that grokking thing in Rising Sun where I was thinking to myself, well, hang on a sec. You know, how am I converting these resources into points? And I'm weighing up the points versus other things that get me different points. So yeah, I can see that. And I think that was informed by playing games similar to that.
Yep. And one of the things, like a lot of times you can look at the point track. The point track on Rising Sun goes to 50. You are going to go past 50 in any game that you are going to get a good score. Because the scores that I've been seeing so far are somewhere between like 55 and 65 for the high end. So when you look at you know, collecting different tiles. If you win a region, there's 8 different colored regions, and more different colors you win battles in, you get bonus points at the end. If you win battles in 7 or more regions, 7 or 8, then you get 30 points at the end, which is huge. And knowing that says, okay, I really want to collect these tiles, or I have to do something that's going to get me those 30 points in some other way.
I'm wondering if there's like a way to grok as well, like a way to grok better, because I think part of the problem goes back to, you know, we were talking about this other guy's issue that he had where he was playing a trick-taking game and it was quite different. You know, I think that was the issue with Rising Sun, is it seemed a lot like Blood Rage, but then there was a few mechanics that I just didn't realize that I hadn't got my head around until it was towards the end of the game.
You thought you had it until it was too late.
There was the particular mechanic was when you were entering battles, you would, if you lost the battle, you would gain money from the victor. And I really wasn't paying attention to it, but it's a really good mechanic to use. And I wasn't moving my figures out in such a way that I could collect money off other people. And then it only hit me right at the end of the game. I was like, wait, that's how everyone else got tons of money. I was like, oh, they were just entering all these battles they knew they were going to lose to collect the money from other people. I should have been doing that. Oh, this isn't, you know, that element doesn't exist in, you know, Blood Rage. So that's why I didn't get it.
So what could I have done to get you to understand this game, the game better? Like, what would you have needed me to do at the beginning so that you would better understand it?
It's hard. I always say this, and I think this is my thing that I need in a sort of game explanation from whoever's teaching me. It's like, okay, you've told me the rules. Now, like, give me a little crib sheet afterwards of, okay, we explained everything, but you're going to want to focus on this, and this aspect, because that is going to help you strategy-wise for the rest of the game. Like that issue. Like, if I was teaching someone now how to play Rising Sun, I'd be like, look, you're going to want to enter a few battles that you can then just lose to get some money off other people, because it's kind of hard to gain money.
Now, imagine you're explaining that to Gloria. Do you think she would understand why she should do that?
Yeah, then I guess I'd have to go further with someone like Gloria and be like, the reason you want money is because look at all these things on the board that, you know, you need money to do. Or, you know, even when you're battling, you need money to do things. It's really good to have money for X, Y, and Z reason.
And by the way, you lose all your money at the end of this phase.
Yeah, so use them all up.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah. And you did explain that part of it. But yeah, it's just, it's hard when you are really good at someone like you who just understands everything. It's hard for you to put yourself back in that beginner mentality. Even for me, I think if I was explaining things to Gloria, you know, a difficult game like that to her, I would probably skim over things that I need to explain. So it's difficult to help people through who can't grok as well, like her.
So our listener, is it Jason who demos games?
Michael, I think.
Michael. Okay. Yep. He gave us a really good suggestion. We were talking about teaching games at conventions, of going on Board Game Geek and printing off a player's guide, that there's tons of those out there. So even if you are not printing it out, you don't know what you're going to play ahead of time, you can pull it up on your phone at the table probably and keep that for yourself. So you don't have to count on Chris to give you a little, like, here's your cheat sheet, because Board Game Geek has them out there for
this.
You.
So you're saying that these player guides, because I haven't done my
it's comprehensive BGG. It's like a one sheet, like, kind of, here's your hints, don't forget this kind of stuff.
Oh, there, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah, player guides. Oh, man, this is going to change everything. You're going down, Chris.
So, well, and that's a great advice for a gamer who's trying to get better at games or learn particular games faster.
But it's not grokking.
Right. No. Exactly. And so someone like, and I keep coming back to Gloria because it's a solid concrete example that hopefully everyone understands what the situation was. This still applies in our Empires of the Void 2 game, where the one person just wasn't understanding what the point was. Another person in that game thought the game was something different. So he misgrokked it.
Yeah.
You know, and in that case, it's like he thought this was supposed to play like this. It turns out that that's not what this game was like. So you can actually mistakenly mess that stuff up too. That stuff being intuiting games. So I can, if I miss grok something, I can really have a bad time playing that game because I expected it to be one thing and it was something else. Especially when I'm playtesting or something, I'll be like, oh, well, it should do this and this and this. And that's because my intuition says this is what it should be, even though that's not what the game is.
I kind of do that with films as well, where I like, I'll be halfway through a film and I'm like, oh, I know what's going to happen. And I feel really like smug about it. I'm like, yeah, this is going to happen. And then if it doesn't happen, often I'm really disappointed. I'm like, wait, the thing I was sure was going to happen didn't happen.
So, I like my ending better.
Yeah. So maybe you can have that the kind of experience where you're like, you're expecting it to go one way. And because you're kind of blindsided, it kind of makes you a bit angry. You're like, oh, what?
Yeah. A couple other comments. So Corey mentions, he says, in my experience, there's no one size fits all answer. My spouse, for example, doesn't do point salad games because the initial glut of options and absence of signposts is a block to confidence, which can be a block to fun.
Yeah, I feel that sometimes with point salads.
Yep. Well, and really any game that you just aren't grokking, this can happen. Point salad, I think, probably is one of the most, all three of the games I talked about. Rising Sun isn't quite point salad, but it's point salad enough.
Yeah.
Anything with a victory point.
Yeah, collecting points towards the end, and if especially if there's many choices on how and no clear way to start.
Yeah, all of those are very tough. Difficult games to grok and very difficult games to learn and frustrating for new players. It's like, I don't want to do that. In fact, I may go so far as saying I may never teach a point salad game or do a point salad game in a casual setting again. Mm. Now, which is weird because if you look at Catan is a point game. But I think the difference there is you are getting points as soon as you do something, and you never lose those points. So getting that one point.
They are a little fluid. You can lose, I guess you longest, can lose the road longest road and that
yeah.
other
but,
one.
But it's very clear to you when you gain yes. and when you lose.
And when everyone else has points, too. There are very few hidden victory points in that game.
Yeah. I think if we look at all of the, you know, successful gateway or classic games, these games are very easily grokked. You know, Risk is a very big game, complex, lots of things you can do, but it's so obvious what you can do. Like, I need to control the world, so therefore I need to destroy everything. Even if I don't have the best strategy for doing it, I understand what I'm supposed to do. And I think that's really what makes the difference between a game that is gateway entry level and a game that is like, okay, wait a minute, this is a real gamer's game.
This is why I love puzzle games, because I think that they, like, that is what I just intuitively get. Like, that's my zone. So anything where I'm looking at something and trying to fit it into an optimal place, so something like Santorini, or what was the game that we played when Eve and Jesse came up to your place, and it had all the pieces, and you had to, it was almost like Mastermind, where you had to guess what the pattern was.
Oh, Zendo.
Zendo.
Yeah.
Love that. And it got to the point, though, where no one wanted to play with me anymore because I would start guessing things, like, on my first turn. It would get, like, three players around the circle, and I'd go, okay, I got it. And everyone else is like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, Looney Labs Zendo. Look it up. It's basically so a cousin fun. To Pyramid Arcade, but it's just a single game. It's
yes, like, and it is like Mastermind, but better.
Yeah.
So much more and really fun.
I really enjoy that one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you brought up another good point, which is games that someone can easily grok are going to be games that they find fun.
Yes.
For Gloria, if it's a word game, she gets it. Like, and it yeah. doesn't really even matter what extra rules you throw in there. Letter Tycoon is yeah. a more complicated word game, but she just gets it.
Yeah.
You know, understands what the strategy is. This is what I need to do. Oh, I need big words? Okay. I need small words? Got it. Need triple letter score? Okay, got that covered. You know, you like the puzzle games, Kitty, and so you just get that. I think for me, I'm much more open to a lot of different kinds of games. There are games I don't like.
I think you generally like head-to-head heavy strategy games tend to be... It's, where I see you enjoying it the most.
That's what that's me as well. Actually, that's more me, I think. But I guess you as well.
Yeah,
you
it's like one too. Of my categories. Yeah. I like strategy games, tactical games, adventure games. I love anything with character development or player board development. Anything where at the start of the game I'm one thing and at the end I can create my tableau or player or character into another thing. Those games I really, really like because I immediately look at it and like starting to put all the different options like, okay, I want this, this, and this, and this, and this is how I build my engine. The game that I had problems with, I mentioned, I don't want to tease, that there's a game I didn't quite grok, Shadowrun Crossfire and now Dragonfire. These are both cooperative deck building games. And I don't know if it was the rules or just the setting or the mechanics or what it was about it, but I I had Shadowrun for probably a year and a half, and I read those rules like four or five different times, and I just could not wrap my head around this game. Then I got Dragonfire because it's the Dungeons & Dragons themed one, and anything Dungeons & Dragons themed I'm going to get. And I'm like, I still don't get it. I still don't, because even it's in my world that I love, and I still don't get it. Finally, I watched probably five different how to play videos, two different playthroughs, and I'm like, okay, I think I get it enough. And I've been able to play it through, and I'm like, all right, now I understand what's going on. I still can't win. It's a really hard cooperative game. I don't even come close to winning, so I haven't grokked any strategy or learned any strategy because that's not intuitive to me. But, oh, so what close.
Do you think you came to a conclusion about why you struggled so much with that? Because it seems like very, I don't know, it seems like an anomaly. Like, normally you don't have this issue.
And I honestly can't tell you. The game itself is relatively simple. I think it's just the complexity. You have all these different cards and these different card types.
Right.
But really what it is you take a group of cards, you form an encounter deck, and you have another group of cards, and it's the, you know, essentially the bad event deck that happens. And then you have your player cards, and those are your decks. And you have this market space where you're buying cards from. Mostly standard fair deck building stuff. You buy from the market, add to your deck, and you're trying to, you know, defeat these encounters. Right. But in order to defeat the encounters, you have four different colored cards, and the encounters have four different colored effects, and you have to play the right colored cards on the encounters. And sometimes there's colorless things, and you have to beat the encounters in a certain order.
Oh my
God. So there'll be like five different things. So it'd be like two red cards, a green card, two of any color card, and a blue card and a red card again. And then if you get all the way at the bottom, that encounter goes away. But if you don't defeat the encounter, then you have to flip another, like, bad event card.
You know, I stopped listening like 2 minutes ago, right?
And that's how it was when I was reading the rules. So,
wrong that this makes me want to learn this game and like be better at it than Chris.
Oh, yeah, I know. I completely get that.
So it's cooperative. I would be happy if you were better at it than me.
I want listeners to email us in on this. If you played this game and you know something and why Chris is struggling, let us know.
So, yes, I now know how to play it. Okay. I just don't know how to beat it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like on the very intro.
I'm gonna read this rule book. I'm so excited about this now.
You can get it online. It's good. James mentioned something, and I really want to get to this. He's like, "Well, playing games with new gamers or with more complex games, I will narrate and explain my moves." So I don't think this helps with. Obviously, if you don't grok something, it's not going to happen. But
yeah. But
what we're trying to talk about is the people who aren't grokking the games we're teaching, how can we better help them understand? And I think this is a good one. And I think this is one that I probably should have done more of in Rising Sun.
Yeah, I think you should probably do this just more in general, because often you're the one teaching the game. And that's always been my complaint. It's like, you always know more than us. You're always better at strategy than us. And, you know, even maybe you mention a couple of things at the beginning for strategy, but I'm still like, yeah, he hasn't given us enough to compete with him. So, yeah, I like this a lot.
It's tricky, though, because if you're playing with people like me, I'm like, stop it. I don't want training wheels. I'm an adult. I'm a grown-up. Well, I want you to treat me like one.
Right. So maybe not telling you what you should do on your turn, just narrating why I'm doing what I'm doing on my turn. And not for all games.
It feels the same to me. I know. I know what you're doing.
Well, and honestly, for the three of us, I might not do that. I'll just let Josh flounder.
Sure.
Well, now he's got his Board Game Geek hint.
So. Oh, yeah. I that place player guides. It's going to be a game changer.
It is. It's good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But for the point salad games that I were playing, so Empires of the Void, the trick-taking game. Actually, I didn't even bring up Artifacts, Inc., which is another Ryan Lockett game, which play with the same person. And that one, we went from a trick-taking game that he eventually got by the end and won, like destroyed us. With the Artifacts, Inc., I don't think it ever actually clicked why he was doing anything. There's nothing you can do in that game that doesn't get you... advance you in the game, but I'm not sure he truly understood why he was doing something until maybe the very end when he saw it all come together and you could see it's like, oh. And that's a very simple point salad game, but I don't know that he'd ever played a game like that before. I would love to play it again to see if that builds, if that knowledge builds, and I think it would. Yeah, I think narrating those more complicated games, if I'm bringing a bunch of people into Great Western Trail, I'm going here because of this. Now, one of the things it does sacrifice is if I'm trying to win, you're going to have a hard time winning with that. There are a few things I did in Rising Sun. Like, I'm putting my, you know, I forget the names of them, but the guy that can go to the shrine, I'm putting him on this one because I want my honor to kick up to the top. So at the next tile, I'll beat this two thing here where there's a tie and I want to break that tie. So it is a completely nice thing of me to do to say this is what I'm going to do. It would probably make me lose the game as someone else noticed, like, oh, I see what you're doing. Okay, well, I'm going to put my guy there.
But Chris, you don't care about winning, so it's fine.
Usually not, but it was my birthday.
Yeah. I just don't.
It's all a lie.
I just don't buy it. I don't buy that he doesn't care about winning.
Typically, I don't. And in that game, there were just so many of us, and I was just excited to play it for a second time because I really liked that game that I figured that you were kind of figuring it out. You were doing things that made it look good. Yeah. We were playing with a friend of ours, Charlie, and he took a really early lead right out of the gate. Took a lot of the attention off of me. Sydney was like right in the middle. Gloria wasn't picking it up, and I felt bad, but you were kind of helping her out, and I was trying to help her out from time to time. But she was just a really good
sport. She's such a good sport.
Yeah.
Always.
So this topic could go on and on. Anything else to add?
Grokking is cool. Grok as much as you want. All the kids are doing it.
All the cool kids are doing it. Let's see if there's anything else here. I think abstract games might be trickier to grok than themed games. It kind of goes the same way where the theme doesn't tie into the mechanics well. With an abstract game, though, it's not quite as bad because where you have themes and mechanics that don't tie in, they can mislead.
Yeah.
But if you know it's just an abstract game and this is just how this move works, there's no question in your head about why this move works. It just does. So, but I'm interested to hear from people, you know, what types of games have you had trouble just understanding and what would have helped you to maybe understand it better? The more games you play, the more kinds of games you play, the better grokker you will become.
Yeah, I like that aspect because it's kind of meta. Like that's so true even for life. Like I've had jumped around and had quite a lot of different jobs. Like, you know, I spent a summer doing sales. I spent a summer teaching in Thailand or whatever. And, you know, when I went into an interview recently, I was able to draw from a lot of that. And I was kind of surprised that I was because it didn't seem relevant. But like the more stuff you do, the more you can apply that to other areas. And you're like, wow, I actually know quite a lot about lots of different things. And it helps you understand a lot more. And that's very true for games as well.
And don't feel frustrated. Like the first point salad game someone plays, you need to, number one, just come out of the gate. It's like, you are not going to be good at this. And you're probably not going to understand it. And I apologize. And
you're
I appreciate you for
fun.
Playing it.
You're here to have fun, but you're not going to have fun.
It's probably going to be torturous for you, but it'll make up for it in the long run. You're going to love these games eventually.
If you say so.
All right. Let's call this a day. And thank everybody. If you want to follow us, you can follow us at Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. I'm at Game Master Chris. I'm getting better and better at posting games that I've been playing and stuff. So you can also leave us an iTunes review if you like. We really love those. And if you actually write something in there, I will certainly try to read your iTunes handle on the air. You can patron us at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, or you can just go to Patreon and search for us, or you can go to Patreon and /tabletopgametalk. All those things work, but tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon is the easier one. You are entered automatically free into all of our contests when you do that. You get bonus entries based on your level. You can still email us and you can still go to Board Game Geek and leave all your games that you're going to play in your 10x10 and all that bonus stuff still happens for you. And for the rest of this stuff, Josh is going to talk.
Indeed. Well, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan, if I have to come in here again, I'm cracking skulls, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamel, Kamai, Joey, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Andrew Rivera, Adriana Dong, Christopher Vincent, and Nate. Until next week, when we talk about getting into role-playing games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So for those people who are still listening, the March giveaway is going to be like a full set of the core rule books of Dungeons and Dragons along with the starter set. Also, Josh, we need to work on speed reading the Patreon names because we're getting a lot of patrons now.
I know. This is going to have to be like some training involved or something. Yeah. You got to get HR and send me away for some sort of speed reading training.
I read them.
Cyclical breathing.
Yeah, I read them super fast last week. Okay. That's the first time I've ever read them.
Good
though.
For you,
I'm just saying.
Pants.
I'm just saying. We're going to put a stopwatch on it and we'll all compete.
Love it.